Hello and welcome to Healthy Mind, Healthy Life with your host Avik. This podcast is all about exploring the latest research, sharing personal stories and providing personal tips for improving our mental health and well-being. Each episode will be joined by experts in the field of mental health as well as individuals who have experienced the transformative power of a healthy mind firsthand. Together, we will dive into a range of topics from managing stress and anxiety to building resilience and cultivating happiness. So, join us on this journey to discover new ways to take care of our minds, bodies, and souls. And let's work together to create a healthier, happier world one episode at a time. So, let's get started. Hello and welcome to Healthy Mind, Healthy Life. I'm your host Avik, and today we are joined by DK, or you can say Dana Karin Ciccone. Welcome to the show, Dana.
Thank you so much for having me.
Lovely, lovely. So, Dana, like before we start our conversation, I would love to mention this to all of our listeners that Dana, known as DK, is a certified Pilates instructor and advocate for those who are battling with chronic pain. So with over two decades of healthcare experience and a personal journey overcoming the chronic back pain, DK founded the movement Remedies in Boston to provide the relief in a weight-neutral environment. So in her book, You Were Meant to Move, DK shares insights on conquering the chronic pain and increasing the stress resilience. So why do wait? Let's join us as we explore her holistic approach to managing the pain and reclaiming the joy through the movement. So welcome to the show again, DK.
Thank you so much.
Great, great. So DK, like if you can share a bit about your personal journey with the chronic pain and how it led you to become a Pilates instructor specializing in the
Sure. So I had my first experience with really kind of debilitating pain in my low back while I was actually mid-performance in, when I was 13 years old. I was a very avid dancer. I had big dreams about my theater possible career when I grew up. And, you know, I think a lot of us have big dreams at that age, and we should, right? But I... yeah, I had this kind of crazy pain in the middle of a performance. And I, while I was able to muscle through the performance, I did end up spending the rest of the weekend kind of on ice packs and heating pads and trying to figure out, you know, just how to have some relief. And that became a very common occurrence in my life. It was sort of come out of nowhere. And eventually in my 20s, I had a very bad back flare up that was kind of similar, but I was losing feeling in my leg. And that led me down a path of discovering I had herniated a disc in my low back. Ooh. And so I went through all the physical modalities for treating that. And at the end of it, you know, anyone who's gone through a herniation recovery or rupture recovery or anything like that, know it's a really, really long journey. Like the tissues take a very long time to heal. And then sort of that was my first exposure to, you know, the realization that once your brain learns that pain is a state that it's in, it's really difficult for the brain to kind of unlearn that. Our brain is so plastic and adaptable. And so it was really difficult for me to return to normal life. And again, I was still young. I was 26 when this happened. Maybe I should start looking into the number 13. anyway, at that point, I really wanted to start moving. And someone recommended giving Pilates a try. I found it was really helpful for me. Even in the moment of flare up, I found it was really helpful to ease my pain. And so it became a part of like my regular tips and tricks, I guess, for trying to manage ongoing pain in my back. And, you know, it wasn't until another 10 or so years later that I decided to become an instructor, when I started to become a little bit more aware of the ways in which my corporate career was really kind of destroying my mental health, and how that was also affecting my pain experiences. And I just decided to step away from a full-time corporate career. And that led me into Pilates, because that was the thing I loved and had the most fulfillment doing. And I thought, well, I'll give teaching a try and see if I'm any good at it. And if I'm terrible, I can always go back and get another crummy desk job. So in the end, I found a tremendous amount of fulfillment working one-on-one with, because most of my Pilates teaching is done one-on-one with people. And because it was always about pain for me, like it was never about exercise, although Pilates technically is, you know, exercise. Those were the kinds of clients I was most interested in working with. And so over time, I built a practice of working with that community. And the more that I worked with them, the more that I saw these patterns of the ways in which they're, the factors leading to the persistence of their pain were really outside of the physical tissues and had more to do with things that were going on in the environment.
Understood. So, you are talking about pain. So one thing is coming to my mind, like, how does the chronic pain impact the stress tolerance, like, and vice versa as well? So if you can share a bit.
Sure. So, I mean, at the most basic level, your pain and stress and fear, they all originate inside your nervous system, essentially. Right. So I think a lot of us have heard of the fight or flight response in the body, which is where your sympathetic nervous system is triggered. And this is, of course, a leftover from being in situations of life or death frequently in the course of human development. And so, you know, the triggering of the sympathetic nervous system was intended to get us out of a dangerous, life-threatening situation. So it causes the blood to rush to our muscles. It causes our breath to quicken, heart rate to quicken. It kind of puts immune responses on the back burner. It can have like an inflammatory response. So, I mean, I'm sure you've had folks on this podcast who are more of a nervous system expert than myself, but essentially, you know, we can very easily get ourselves into a state of hypervigilance and constant vigilance, which causes the nervous system to just be perpetually triggered in this sympathetic state. And what can happen is that you end up with this sort of central sensitization, which is where your threshold for pain is much less, because you're kind of so hyperactive in your nervous system that like everything, you know, a feather feels like a squeeze, you know what I mean? Like it's really disproportionate. So that can happen. At the same time, I mean, your brain reacts with a pain response when it believes that you are in danger. So, you know, it's a very beneficial thing. I think one of the things I normally start with people is to help them understand, and this was valuable for me, is to help them understand that pain is a sign of a well-functioning nervous system. I think I, for the longest time, especially because pain started when I was so young, I had a narrative in my head that pain is happening in my body because there's something fundamentally wrong with me. But in fact, pain happens because, you know, if you were to stick your hand in a fire, that's your brain's way of telling you like, hey, you're going to lose some flesh if you don't move that. So, you know, it's fundamentally a good thing to have a pain response. You would be really at risk of death if you didn't have pain responses. But the challenge comes when the pain response is getting tied to a sense of danger that isn't actually representative of actual danger. So your brain can't necessarily tell the difference between, you know, a tiger like chasing you and a boss, you know, screaming at you for a deadline that you missed or something. So it's like that state of fear and being in danger can be triggered in the nervous system, resulting in a pain response. And for some people, they have chronic pain and they never even had, you know, an injury. I mean, that's certainly true in the case of my childhood back pain. Like I had the level of pain that would normally be associated with, like, you know, a car accident or a fall or something, but I didn't have any of those things. And so that was like, to me, the first clue that it was related to things that were going on outside my body. But of course, it took me decades to figure that out.
Really, lovely. Totally understood. So in your experience, like, what do you want to say, like, about some of the common misconceptions about the chronic pain, stress resilience that you encounter?
I think some of the chronic common misconceptions, I mean, first of all, there's the feeling that if you start to have pain every day, that it's something that's never going to leave you. That is certainly a belief that I carried. I thought pain was going to be a permanent state. And you can really just like look at the research if you don't believe me, but I've certainly seen it with my clients and in my own life that pain can improve. Especially even if you have a chronic condition or something like arthritis, where like physically you've had a change in the bone structure that is, you know, you can't reverse arthritis, right? But there are people walking around in this world who have arthritis and are not in the same amount of pain as others. So there is really a complex picture. So I think understanding that, you know, pain does not have to be forever, even though your brain will believe it. Like every time, even to this day, that I have a flare up of some kind, I will believe that pain is like, okay, here we go. Like, this is the end. I'm going to have this forever now. And one of the really great ways that we can sort of dismantle that is to instill or remind the brain that it can have confidence in the body and that the body is capable. And that's why movement is such an incredible, important part of this. Another common misconception is that rest when you have pain is the best thing. That's really rarely the case. I mean, if you have a really severe acute situation, like a broken bone, you know, they probably want you to rest in the beginning. But for just about every condition that I can think of, you're better off moving your body in some kind of way than staying still. And I just think that some of that is like archaic wisdom that we learned, and we've just learned so much about the nervous system since we were kids. And so it's just not necessarily well known. And there's benefits both because of the neurotransmitters that are released when you move, which just cause mood improvement. But also it strengthens your body. It helps keep you mobile. I mean, we have to deal with the fact that, you know, any part of our body's mobility that we don't continually practice, we risk losing at some point in the aging process. So it's really just important to move above anything else. And that's why, you know, my book, You're Meant to Move, really just emphasizes the fact that, you know, evolutionarily we are a species of movement. And so I think a lot of us feel pains and we believe, okay, well, this means I should stay still and I should stay safe. And again, I think that's because the brain is kind of telling us that's what we need. But in actuality, for most of us who have pain, especially joint pain, finding a way to be a little bit active every single day is actually going to be far more beneficial in the long term.
Exactly. So when talking about your book, your book also emphasizes on reclaiming an active life despite of the chronic pain. So if you can share some of the practical tips for the listeners who are really struggling with the chronic pain but want to lead a more active lifestyle.
Yeah, I think the hope that I would offer is that people have been proving over and over again that it's possible to make progress. It's possible to incrementally strengthen the body no matter what. I mean, up until our very last breath. It's not like I think we have this misconception that we like reach a phase in our body where we're older, and so therefore our body is like no longer capable of building muscle, of getting stronger, of being active. And I mean, while it may be harder to maintain muscle, it's certainly the chemical processes in our bodies do change or slow. But muscles, when loaded or taxed, will change. They will adapt. They will strengthen. And that's why you hear the as much as I don't really enjoy social media, there are some wonderful stories out there of people who have taken up weightlifting in their 70s and beyond and found that they had beneficial adaptations. There's even studies of, you know, giving deadlifts to people living in community you know, living situations who are assisted living for older folks, and finding that their back pain and their hip pain and knee pain improves because they're doing deadlifting and weightlifting activities. So I think the most important thing to do is to kind of figure out why you're doing it. And we, for many, you know, many of us have had this kind of overemphasis on the aesthetics outcome as a reason for moving. And we have to just get away from that. Like, it's not about burning your calories, or in my opinion, that's, you know, our priority is not about trying to slim down or look a certain way. The priority is to stay as functionally mobile and active in our bodies as we can, so that we can live the most fulfilling lives that we can. I mean, that's, we only have so much time. And I think making sure you're clear on why you want to do it, making sure that you have something that you feel good doing every single day, whatever it is. It could be sweeping, it could be dancing around your house, it could be swimming, it could be any number. There's like no one correct way to move your body. And then always making sure you're finding something outside of your comfort zone, safely outside your comfort zone, that you're using to challenge yourself. Because most of us have a disproportionately negative perception of what our bodies are actually capable of, especially if we've been in pain. So it's important to always challenge that, because let's say your why or your, like, you know, big goal is that you want to get back to, you know, maybe hiking or a certain sport or activity that you used to enjoy. You're not going to go from lying in bed every day to doing that sport the next day. Like, that's a surefire way to get yourself feeling terrible, is to try and jump really far. So it's important to kind of keep your eye on that long-term thing you really want to do and incrementally try and make steps to get there. But also always be doing something every day that is really in your, I call it your refuge movements. It's like your feel-good toolbox. And, you know, all of us have something that I'm sure we can find that just really feels good. It can even be simple, like moving your feet and ankles. And, you know, there has to be something that we move that feels good every single day.
Exactly. Definitely. So, with this, like, if you can also share, like, or maybe any advice that you would like to give to someone who feels discouraged or maybe hopeless due to chronic pain. So, I mean, how can they begin to cultivate that resilience and that hope?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, just be kind to yourself. I mean, it's understandable. It's really understandable to be in that state. It's very difficult to dig yourself out. Like I always say, when it comes to working with people in chronic pain, my biggest challenge is not figuring out what moves to give them. It's helping them show up. You know what I mean? I mean, that is really the hardest part. And I think it's just like anything else. You need to surround yourself with the evidence of what's possible. True. And you know, for me, I did not believe that being mobile was possible, that I was going to be able to move in my body again the way that I wanted. And so I started looking for evidence. I started pulling up research and trying to find stories, examples of other people who had done the things that I wanted to do and recovered from, you know, what I went through or more. And really, in the scheme of things, I mean, I'm talking about, you know, persistent intermittent pain. There are certainly folks who have bounced back from much more severe things than that. And so I think just surrounding yourself with the positive evidence. And the other thing is that once our brain believes a thing is true, it will seek evidence to reinforce it. So I think one of the first questions I'll ask someone when they tell me, you know, I can't do X, Y, Z because it hurts me, is I'll ask if they can think of any time they've ever done that thing and it didn't hurt them. And there's almost always an example of that. And then you kind of start to say, okay, well, what was different about that? Why were you able to sit for that long journey and you weren't able to sit, you know, for this other thing without having pain? And oftentimes it's, well, I was, you know, I was going on vacation, or I was with my daughter, or, you know, like the circumstances were not stress creating. And so I think it's important that people pay attention to the way that situations make them feel. And I also think it's important, and I meant to say this previously when you asked about misconceptions about stress resilience, I think we have a belief that, again, like I believed pain was inherently a flaw in me. I think we believe that experiencing a stress response is an inherent flaw in ourselves. And it's just not true. You know, feeling overwhelmed by an inundation of information and difficult situations that are out of our control. I mean, by its very definition, stress is something that is not our fault because it happens outside of us. Now, whether or not one person has a very emotional response to the same situation as someone else, I mean, that is like about your personal, you know, sensitivity, and that is not a thing to be ashamed of. So I think we also have to honor where we are. We have to be mindful of the fact that we live in an environment that makes it very difficult for us to feel good every day. Our modern societies are built in a very sedentary way. We are in situations of political and, you know, turmoil in a lot of cases. There's just, and financial strain. Like there's just so many things that are outside of our control. And so I think the most important thing is to find the very smallest piece of joy that you can grab that has to do with movement, even if it's 3 minutes a day, 4 minutes a day, and then just devote yourself to that. And then I believe you will find that you will have a little bit more endurance and stamina every single day if you keep trying that and continue to surround yourself with the positive evidence, you know, to celebrate the achievements of going that, you know, taking that extra long walk or going up that flight of stairs or whatever it is. I think we have a tendency to focus on the things that we can't do instead of focus on what we're really doing. And our bodies are amazing. I mean, they continue to show up, they heal, they recover. And I think there's so much evidence of hope.
Exactly. Exactly true. So before we wrap up, like, what are some of the key takeaways or actionable steps that listeners can implement to unlock their resilience in the face of chronic pain and the stress?
Well, Avik, of course, you know, I'm going to say that your one first step is to buy my book.
No, I'm kidding.
So, I mean, some practical steps. So first of all, really start paying attention to what's happening in your surroundings when pain shows up. A lot of times we get distracted. We start looking for a physical reason for why a pain is getting worse. And a lot of times it has something to do with your environment, your relationships, your emotional state, you know, other things that are going on. So I would say take a full inventory and really start to pay attention to it. Find movement that makes you joyful, you know, and not focus on calorie burn or sweat or other markers of what is a quote unquote successful movement experience. Make sure that it's about what feels good in your body. Find people who will help you celebrate the achievements that you do make, and stay really focused on, you know, when you visualize an active life, like, what does that look like for you? And it doesn't have to look like anything anyone else has ever defined. I think we really easily get caught up in trying to chase after the values and the expectations that are defined by people outside of us. So one of the most important steps I ask people to take in the book is to come up with a set of personal value statements that are really reflective of the things that make you feel fulfilled as a person, and make sure that that is your measuring stick for how you spend your time, you know, to whatever degree you can. Obviously, we have to make ends meet, we have to have jobs and so on, but finding the movement that really meets those personal values is going to be a lot easier to focus on and do than trying to force yourself to do something because, you know, it was a TikTok trend or whatever. And then, you know, just trying to figure out, being honest with ourselves or with yourself mm-hmm. about how stress is showing up in your body. I think we often get disassociated from our bodies just as a result of coping with like the inundation of information in our environment. So yeah, really start paying attention to, is it a stomach ache? Is it a tightening of your chest? Is it, you know, it could be any number of things, your breath, and then see if you can figure out like exactly what your body is trying to tell you in that moment. Yeah. And like use that as information to let you know, okay, this environment or this situation is causing me a great deal of stress. I'm going to step out of it now, because it's not about not having stress. We're going to have stress. It's not that the body is not meant to not have stress, but the point is that we need to recover, and we don't make time for recovery, because how can we, when like literally 24 hours a day, you can open a screen and get inundated. So intentional recovery is really the key to stress resilience, in my opinion, and movement is a great form of intentional recovery.
Definitely, definitely. Thank you so much, DK, for sharing your insights. And as we wrap up this episode, I definitely want to extend a sincere thank you to DK for sharing her expertise on unlocking the resilience in the face of chronic pain and the stress. So, like, dear listeners, like, DK's insights into the link between chronic pain and the stress tolerance have definitely been invaluable. So, remember that resilient isn't just about avoiding the pain, but at the same time, embracing it as a part of the journey towards the healing. Mm,
so true.
Yeah. So, also, like, for more information about Dana's work and her book, You Are Meant to Move, or to explore the movement remedies in Boston, visit her website. So, DK, like, how they can connect, like, what is your website and how someone wants sure. to connect?
So my website is movementremedies.org. I have virtual classes and coaching. I do have also a Instagram handle, movement_remedies. And mm-hmm. I'm on Facebook as Movement Remedies LLC. So lots of ways to connect with me. And I welcome individual emails and calls, because I'm always, you know, happy to chat with folks about how they can make strides with movement and chronic pain.
Lovely. That's really lovely. So what I'll also do, dear listeners, like, I'll also put this into the show notes so that it will be easier for you to reach out to her. And at the end, thank you so much for listening, dear listeners. Stay tuned for more empowering conversations. And until next time, take care and be well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.